radioalbion.com.
Well, that's the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and call the scenes to footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. Today's date is Monday the 23rd of May 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Once again, we have reconvened the roundtable with three good knights here, myself, Sven Longshanks, and joined by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson and Grandpa Dan. Matt, good day, sir. How are you? How are you doing?
You know, if for whatever reason I don't seem as coherent as I normally am, I'm only doing that to make Grandpa feel better. And not to mention the fact that I'm just happy that he's alive. So give me a break on that.
Well, it is Monday morning as well. Grandpa, how are you doing? How's life treating you?
Well, as Dr. Johnson pointed out, I am still alive. And I'm excited to be here to make my contribution of essentially saying random things. So yeah, it's going to be a fun discussion. I really love doing these shows. In all seriousness, I think these shows are a lot of fun.
Well, it's always good to just sync up your favorite news story of the week and then discuss them. So we have three news stories today. And once again, the subject of my news story is Viktor Orban, just because he is such a good leader and he just always seems to be making good points when he hits the news. And the reason why he's in the news this week or last week, which is when I actually got the news article from, is because he has won with a landslide once again. And he's given an absolutely fantastic speech to Parliament, hitting on lots of really important points that we talk about here at Radio Albion. He really clearly is the best leader in Europe. And I know we talked about him last time, but he has just been voted in again, as I say, with another landslide win. Prime Minister Orban was sworn in as Hungarian government leader for the fifth time last week and spoke out about various topics in his speech to the parliament, including commenting on the mass migration policies of Western Europe. According to Orban, the West is engaging in a suicidal wave, and he stated that Western countries were experimenting with the program of Great Replacement, referring to the theory of population exchange and demographic shifts coined by French writer Reynard Camus, the newspaper Le Figaro reports. Orban has been a critic of mass migration in Western Europe for years, and last year claimed that the migration agenda was part of a larger plan to create a new proletariat, saying, "The West just does not want to maintain itself. Let's not beat around the bush. Certain civilizations are able to reproduce. The Western civilization is not able to reproduce, so much so that they are unable to decide whether this is even a problem at all. And there are others who sense the problem of declining demographics and they want migration. They believe alien peoples from distant lands should be moved in and that this will stop the demographic decline. But mass migration, the millions of people who have been lured here, are basically a global plan of moving in the new proletariat." According to Orban, the program of replacement wants to replace endangered Christian children with migrants from other civilizations. And he stated that he saw gender ideology in the same manner, referring to it as madness. "Brussels is abusing its powers every single day and trying to force bad and foreign things upon us," Orban said, and added, "but we are not going to give up on our border protection. We will not allow migrants in, and we will protect our families, and we will not allow gender activists into our schools. And in Hungary, a father shall be a man, a mother a woman, and our children shall be left alone. We stand for peace and security in Hungary, and we shall not accept economic measures that would ruin Hungarian families," he added. And I'll just pause there because, I mean, he's hit three really important points. He's talking about the family and the fact that he wants to protect endangered Christian children. So he sees Christian children as endangered. He wants to protect children from the transgender ideology. And he is not going to allow replacement migration into Hungary. He's going to encourage the Hungarians to produce. I mean, this is just such a breath of fresh air to me. And the fact that he's looking out for the Hungarian people and refusing to go along with sanctions on Russian oil, Either he's making use of the fact that Russian oil and gas is being offered cheaper than anywhere else, and he obviously wants the cheapest fuel for the population. But the real point here is that he sees what he's doing as his Christian duty. He's not just seeing this as he needs to protect the Hungarian people from demographic replacement, but he also wants to protect the Hungarian culture, the Christian culture. That is absolutely central to all of this. So, I just think it's brilliant. He's been voted in again for the fifth time. We're told that Orbán is terrible, yet quite clearly the Hungarian people don't think so. They think he's absolutely fantastic. And democracy does seem to be working in Hungary, at least. And of course, we're told that democracy is in peril in Hungary because of this. Matt, what do you make of Orbán's speech here to Parliament?
Well, he's one of the few absolutely first-rate statesmen around. He's right there with Lukashenko and Duterte and the Philippines and Putin and just a handful of others. There's so much to unpack here. I don't even know where to begin. But he talks about the new proletariat, which is a very nice way to put it. You know, when Karl Marx coined that term in the 1840s, it was defined as somebody who has no property, but only has his body to rent out for 12 hours a day to not starve. Now, under the Great Reset, he won't even have that. It's literally based on, not figuratively, but it's really based on the cancellation of debt in exchange for giving up your property. But property also includes these long-term employment contracts. I mean, at least Marx kind of assumed that at least under in good times, you're going to have normal contracts. You're going to stay in one factory. That's not even the case here. This is the gig economy now. Banks are even using that term, these very short-term, almost non-contracts. So not only will the proletariat have nothing, including self-esteem, especially depending on their race, but they won't even have the labor contract that even Marx assumed they would have. And part of the purpose of the influx is to make sure that this group of people doesn't do anything about it. It's a reserve army. It's not just to drive wages down. I mean, it is for that, to replace them in jobs. It is for that too, to prevent unionization and all the rest. But it's also to keep down fairly educated, upwardly mobile white people. And it's interesting to note that just either today or yesterday, the EU issued a warning about an influx of Ukrainian migrants into Europe after bringing in millions, almost all military age males, into Europe over the last 5 years. Now suddenly it's a problem when these migrants happen to be white. And knowing full well what Ukrainian political attitudes are, it is a threat to them. And it seems that, a nationalist economics, and we've seen this in Russia, we've seen it in Belarus, we've seen it in Libya, we've seen it in Iran, I think Iraq, and Hungary is the subsidizing of families. This has got to be a key element in any public policy. Tax breaks. In Russia, of course, there's a grant system for intact families that have more than one child. Libya, that was one of the big cardinal points of Gaddafi's government, was this huge grant, all paid for with oil, by the way. Taxes were all either non-existent or very low, to give families I forget the exact number, 75,000, the equivalent, to start off, to be able to buy a house, pay off certain bills. And that functioned, though, only if it was an actual family. Now, that can never happen in the U.S. because no one knows what a family is. But it was in Syria, too, before the war, under Assad. It was a cardinal point of the Ba'ath Party. Because Saddam Hussein was always at war, he didn't have a chance to do this. But this is typical social nationalist kind of economics. And, of course, it all pays for itself. Any tax break, I think in Germany in the 30s, it used to be 25% per child. So if you had four kids, you paid zero taxes. And because these children are going to grow up in a much healthier environment, that's going to go back to the treasury double, triple, quadruple as the child reaches adulthood. So it's rational public policy. But the family is the enemy, and Orbán is aware of that as far as the regime is concerned. It's a transmission belt for tradition and religion and discipline. and it takes kids away from, you know, the television. It takes them away from everything that's brainwashing them in a monopoly of media environment, which is identical in its ideological content no matter where you go. Of course he's going to be elected in a landslide, but we all know what's going to happen. The election was condemned by the U.S., you know, weeks in advance. The same slogans that they do whenever someone they don't like wins. It's the exact same letter, the exact same press release. They just fill in the blanks differently. And some Western politicians are going to notice this. You know, as wicked as the Marxist system was, it did protect people in the Eastern Bloc from the decadence of American media and education. And that's why you have a very different kind of civil society in the East than you do in the West. A very different approach to macroeconomics, with the state playing an important role. The state has a huge role to play, especially in a small country. So what's ultimately going to happen is that they're going to be condemned, they're going to be cut off. But all that's going to do is continue to drive them towards Russia and China, and their economy is going to continue to explode. I have the feeling something like this is going to happen in Poland too. But it was about 10 years ago. Poland didn't have a single left-wing member of their legislature. But of course, being members of the EU, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. But as Hungary does very well, Poland's going to notice this. Bulgaria is certainly going to notice this. And you're going to see just the American system, dire poverty, homelessness, increasing mass inflation, drive even Greece and a whole bunch of other places that have been struggling under the EU right into the new customs union with Russia. The food shortages, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute, are forcing governments to ban exports. So you're having national trading blocks coming into existence. Free trade is now going out the window so long as these shortages and many other things continue. And Alexander Dugin, when he first said this, I didn't agree. I think I agree now that all of this is creating a brand new platform for economic nationalism, or at the most, economic regionalism, to protect their assets, to protect food and minerals, and keeping them at home and banning all export. They're banning export of currency in many places. Of course, the U.S. can't go along with this, but as it gets into this dire Great Reset poverty and race violence and everything they're going to use to keep people quiet about this stuff, the East is going to continue to do well. So you're going to have a lot of politicians, a lot of people starting to notice this. And what they do about it, of course, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. But what they're going to do about it is going to be the interesting thing. So Hungary's in a lot of trouble in the short term, but in the medium and long term, they're going to do very, very well.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Ukrainian refugees there, because Hungary has taken loads and loads of Ukrainian refugees. It's just the ones from the other side of the world with a completely different culture and a completely different religion that they're not interested in helping. Well, I'll offer up the next comment to Grandpa here. Orbán stated in his speech that he won the election despite the fact that the Hungarian left and their international allies, politicians, financiers, and the media all rallied against us. He also made special allusion to the European Union and the Hungarian-born financier George Soros. Let us make it clear. Brussels and George Soros were also playing to ensure our downfall, he said. They threatened us however they could. No wonder this victory fills us with electrifying energy. My friends, there is nothing so exhilarating as to be shot at without a result, Orbán continued. We have won four times in a row despite financial crises, a global pandemic, floods of migrants, and even a war that was and is threatening our country. As ever, the Prime Minister pledged to put Hungarian interests first, alluding to the February 24 Russian invasion of Ukraine and its impact on the global economy. Orbán predicted a long, hard conflict. We Hungarians must be prepared for this, and in this tumult, we must set our course and create our own policy, he said. Part of the picture of the decade of war facing us will be recurring waves of suicidal policy in the Western world. We seek a community of free and equal nations. We seek a homeland of homelands, a democracy of democracies. We seek a Europe that fears God and defends the dignity of its people, a Europe that strives to the pinnacles of culture, of science, and of the spirit. Orbán spoke of the importance of the role of the family in the future of Hungary. In the years ahead, Hungary will protect its families and be proud of its children, he said. We believe in the nobility of work, and we know that the character of our nation is compatible with an independent individual and a cohesive community. This is because Hungary, alongside Poland, has become the last Christian conservative bastion of the Western world. The way we think about the world and the future is different from that of the liberal globalist mainstream, and we are building our country in a way that is different from the way that they are building theirs, Orbán said. We make no secret of the fact that we also want to give hope to others, hope that the Christian outlook on life, love of country and national pride, in other words, national politics, are not things of the past but of the future, he added. 30 years ago, we thought that Europe was our future. Today, we think that we are Europe's future. Let us feel the weight of our responsibility. God save Hungary. God above us all. Hungary before all else. Go Hungary. Go Hungarians. I mean, what a fantastic speech there, pointing out that Hungary is the last Christian conservative bastion of the Western world, and that we need a reinvigorating nationalist politics to lead the way. They've gone from like one of the smallest, most insignificant countries in Europe to really being the center of European civilization, that's really pushing forwards, that sums up what the people of Europe feel but are not being expressed by our politicians. Grandpa, what do you make of what Viktor Orbán has to say here? I think this is one of his best speeches, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to give you a hard time about fangirling for Viktor Orbán again, you know, but actually after we've gone through this story, I'm fangirling too. I mean, this is all really, really, really great stuff, not just because of what he's saying he wants to do for Hungary, but pointing out the suicidal path that the West is on and continues to be on. This got very little. His election got very little to no coverage in the U.S. media. You can see why. They were stacked up because it's not like, oh, we just went to election and won. I mean, he was up, as he pointed out, against George Soros, against all these NGOs. I mean, the whole pressure of the Western system tried to undermine to keep him from being elected, which is funny in and of itself, in the sense that, you know, we always have the U.S. posturing about, you know, interference and meddling, foreign meddling in elections. But of course, as we all know, our values and who we are means that it's okay if we meddle in other people's elections. It's so funny when the U.S. goes around and they're, you know, the latest thing they have to tout about is the rules-based order. But the rules essentially mean that there are no rules if the U.S. and its proxy states, you know, just do what they want, but everybody else has to follow whatever rules they make up at the time. It's just really encompassing of the bizarro world that we live in. Can you just imagine, as you go through this, and this is what I was doing as you were reading through all of these great comments, and they really, really are great comments. Can you imagine any ruler? I mean, can you imagine, I don't know, if Boris Johnson got reelected, can you picture a Boris Johnson standing up there and saying this? Can you picture senile Biden, if he could be coherent, saying something like this? Or even Trump, you know, we got everybody here in America, oh, we're going to get Trump back in 2024. Even if you did that, could you picture Trump standing up here and saying even a tenth of what Orbán is saying here? This is what real, you know, leadership, this is what it looks like. You know, and this sounds so, it's crazy because this sounds so refreshing and foreign to us. But this is just simply what leaders sound like when they don't actively hate their own people. This is all this is. I mean, this is a breath of fresh air. And we look at it, we nod our heads and go, oh, this is really, really good. But I mean, it's not really that far out there. It's just that we've gone so far into clown world. Our leaders, the rulers of our country, actively hate the people that live here. So when we hear a leader that stands up there and actually says things that, you know, reflect the fact that he doesn't hate the people they're supposed to rule over, it's like this, oh my gosh, just we can't believe he's saying these things. Now, I mean, can you imagine we live in such a clown world that when he comes out and he says, in Hungary, a father is a man and a mother is a woman. Can you imagine just like 10 years ago, if you were to go back in time and we were to tell ourselves that 10 years ago that this would be like, oh my gosh, you can't just say that. That's a controversial statement. That just tells you how far we've gone downhill. That tells you how bad things things have gotten. And this just at the beginning of the story where he get actually, I'm sitting here going, I can't believe he just went ahead and pushed in on this, but he actually goes into the great replacement. And after the Buffalo shooting narrative here in the U.S., we were told over and over that that's a basically anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. And it's been disproven, it's been debunked, and it's complete disinformation. You can't believe it is disinformation, conspiracy theories. And here you have the leader of a country that actually stands up there and talks about, yeah, you know, this great replacement things, it's real. We're not going to do that. And it's just, I thought this was more disinformation. As Dr. Johnson pointed out, they're going to have a hard time. I mean, the only thing that might save them from a complete, maybe an attempt at an open color revolution is just the fact that the West, and by the West, we mean the U.S., has their hands so full. They're getting their plate so piled up because there it doesn't seem to be a single entity running it, maybe aside from Satan himself. And you've got this figurehead Biden out there going around and rambling. So you have all these different people doing their own agendas. We've got the war with Russia. You know, we've got the continual war against basically the Christian population of the country. And now you have Joe Biden has come out and said, we'll go to war with China if they decide to reintegrate Taiwan on their own terms. So the thing that might save Hungary in that is that the U.S. is getting its plate so full, they might just honestly not have time to try to do a color revolution in Hungary. But I guess we'll have to just wait and see. But yes, all in all, it's good stuff, Sven. Glad you brought that story. It's I'm fangirling too now. It's really good stuff.
Well, it's inspirational. That's the thing. I mean, he's very clear about it. What was it that he says here? We make no secret of the fact that we also want to give hope to others. And yeah, it does. It gives me hope. I mean, it's very encouraging. It brightens up my day. It gives me hope for the future when I read the news from Hungary. And then we read the news from America. And what's going on in America, Matt? What's your news story that you've got for us this week?
Well, this isn't my normal fare, so to speak. But it's something that I used to ignore years ago, but I'm not ignoring it anymore. And I came across an article where the headline is Lab Meat to Hit U.S. Grocery Sales by 2022 after quiet approval by FDA and USDA. Now, this is supposed to replace meat that comes from cattle. In other words, normal meat, which in and of itself is a complete food. Everything you need is in it. That's going to be a thing of the past. So instead of something being, you know, an animal raised on a ranch like a normal reality, this is going to come from, you know, high-tech laboratories. It's not meat by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly it's going to be marketed as meat. And it's not an accident that this is an Israeli company. That's at the front of this, and I'll get to that in a minute. Future Meat Technologies. They've built the first lab-grown meat plant over there, and they're going to, as it says, use bioreactors to churn out cell-cultured meat for American restaurants. Now, the company, the Israeli company, came into existence in 2018, which was the exact same year that this stuff was approved. So this can't be a coincidence. It's called cellular meat. Of course, it's not meat at all. It takes stem cells from a live animal. They don't say what kind of animal, but stem cells from a live animal, and then they culture them in, get this, a nutrient-rich liquid. I'm dying to know what is in this nutrient-rich liquid. I guarantee you soy is going to be one of the huge products, just like in all the baby formula. Thank God my kids, myself, we were all breastfed because what's in formula is disastrous. It's nothing but chemicals. They're not saying what this nutrient-rich liquid is. I can't find it. So then it ends up being clusters of multiplying cells in this scaffold that, of course, the Israeli company creates. And then what they do is they make, you know, patties out of it or nuggets out of it. Something tells me that we've been eating this. Now, I don't eat it, but at McDonald's and Burger King, I have the feeling that's what this stuff is, because McDonald's has spent a fortune paying fines for refusing to disclose what's in the so-called meat. You know, the sign says billions and billions served. I remember my dad used to say, there's not enough cattle on the planet to serve billions and billions and billions of hamburgers. So the Israeli company was created in 2018, right after this was given, you know, theoretical approval. And of course, you know how they're promoting this. They're using the myth of global warming, which I've been fighting since 1990 when this first, you know, became fashionable. And that's going to be where it is. Cows, you know, as if cattle have anything to do with pollution, you know, not the massive factories all over the planet. And it shouldn't surprise you that the monopoly food production industry, run by Tyson and Cargill, are the top two investors. So they're working with Future Meat Technologies in Israel. And of course, there's going to be, you know, this is going to be a soy product. It's going to be nothing but chemicals. They're going to market it as meat. They're going to lie through their teeth. You know, Tyson and Cargill are involved in destroying, you know, the small farmer has been largely destroyed. The only thing left has been the ranchers. Some of you may note that the ranchers have been the first line of defense against illegal immigration down south. But Tyson and Cargill have been putting the screws to these guys. It used to be a mom and pop industry up until fairly recently. And they're just pushing lower and lower the amount of money per pound that they're willing to pay these guys. About half of these places have gone out of business in the last 10 years. So, you know, the food shortages, of course, are, to say the least, artificial. Two states, now is it Nebraska? Nebraska and Kansas together can feed the entire world if all of their acreage was planted properly. Hopefully the food shortages are going to, you know, maybe farmers can now plant for the first time in a long time and have it not be soy. So this is going to, this is full of hormones. It's going to have kids having their puberty at 7 years old, which as far as the regime is concerned, is fine by them. And birth defects and lower IQ and everything that comes from all of this GMO nonsense and the feminization that comes from soy, as if they're not eating enough soy. Now their meat is going to be, it's not going to be meat. It's going to be forcible vegetarianism. Now, Future Meat Technologies was founded by a guy named Yaakov Namias. I can't tell where he's from. Of course, he has Israeli citizenship, but he got his degree. He's a bioengineer, not a doctor. He's a bioengineer specializing in diseases of the liver. He's at Hebrew University of Jerusalem, but he got his PhD from Minnesota, and he still lives in Minnesota. Now, I have the feeling that, of course, he is being, you know, I don't know where this guy's money comes from. He's a billionaire for some reason. I don't know how, but he's the point man that both Tyson and Cargill are using to create this non-meat chemical product. And I have the feeling that the main factories in Israel, because if he gets in trouble, he can run there. Because I have the feeling it's all kinds of backroom deals. And the truth is that the ranchers who are involved in lawsuits against all this stuff, whatever they're left, they don't have the power to fight all of this. This is, you know, and now meat is going to be created not by the farm of the mom and pop ranchers, which, you know, in many ways places still are the norm, but by the stainless steel fermenters, which is what this guy creates. And that's where the cells then reproduce and develop into what they claim are edible tissues. And you know, because they lower greenhouse gas emissions, that means it's going to be okay. And this is going to be the fake debate over this stuff. Most people haven't heard of it until fairly recently. And so it's going to lower the price of meat, but of course this is not going to be, it's not going to be meat. Now the FDA has approved this, but what does that mean? It's an ongoing approval. They've approved it very recently for actual distribution starting at the end of this year. But as I've said 100 times, these regulatory agencies are simply arms and branches of the private sector. The head of the FDA today is a guy named Robert Califf, who is I think he's a cardiologist, but or at least has that background. He was professor of cardiology at Duke. Now, he, back in 2009, did not get the nod to become head of FDA because how close he is to the pharmaceutical industry. He worked at, you know, when he was at Duke, all these clinical trials, they convinced them to do large, expensive, and very profitable clinical trials there. He was a paid consultant for Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, Eli Lilly, ProPublica, up until 2013, and he became a millionaire doing that. And then he was a director of something called Portola Pharmaceuticals. So he is very close to this industry. And it's why in 2009 he was rejected as FDA commissioner, because he was so close and considered very corrupt. And to his credit, Bernie Sanders ripped this guy when he was talking about voting against him in 2021 for his renomination. His underling, the deputy director, is Janet Woodcock. And she's even worse. She's been condemned, and the Biden, so-called Biden administration, has been condemned for nominating this woman, acting commissioner of the FDA, and now the deputy commissioner of the FDA. And she was the director of the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research for almost 25 years. So now that means she has ruled over one of the worst failures of FDA's history. She promoted and pushed narcotic opioids. Well, that's a bit redundant. Opioids. Terrible decision. She approved the Opana without any real serious testing. Zoodro, too, which is another very powerful one. The Scientific Advisory Committee voted against it 11-2. She pushed it anyway, and also personally approved OxyContin for children as young as 11 years old. And so she's been condemned there, but that's not going to change anything, because that has nothing to do with these people are brought in because of their connection with the drug industry. These are the people, and those very much like them, that have been approving this fake meat. So it is completely meaningless whether, you know, people say, the FDA approved it, therefore it must be good. Well, these people are working for and continue to have ties with these industries. And so you have bioengineering now going to be, so all of food, when they destroy the family farm, when they destroy the cattle ranchers, which is in the process of happening, that means two or three companies, and the third biggest one is in Brazil, but I guarantee you it's nothing but American. They're all English speakers there. In this area, are going to have a complete and total monopoly of food, none of which is going to have any connection to the earth or reality. It's because these are all going to be food-like products, saturated in soy and every kind of GMO you can imagine. You're going to see intelligence drop. You're going to see lethargy and abulia. You're going to see a lack of drive and initiative. You're going to see a lot more of miscarriages. You're going to see everything that's connected with this kind of nonsense and the feminization of males because of the soy. And they're not going to release anything. They're going to sell this stuff with a big picture of a cow on it or something. And no one's going to know any better. And because the regime is so deeply behind this, as they were all the drugs, it's all essentially, this is almost drug, this kind of thing. Because of that, you're going to have people actually made, physically made from this stuff, completely changing what it is to be. So talk about satanic. I know Grandpa mentioned satanic, but this is the very definition. It's taking part of the created order that God made and eliminating it and trying to build something to replace it. And of course, you know, that never works out. So this is literally satanic, to create a human being that is purely from GMO chemicals and not from, you know, what they're supposed to be. So we don't even know. Of course, this is banned in Russia. GMO has been banned in Russia for a long time now. A lot of Eastern Europe, I guarantee you, Hungary has done it or is in the process of doing it. It isn't food. And we know the negatives that go along with this, but not everything. The long-term effects of this garbage called meat. We know what happens. You know, there's been experiments where people have ate at McDonald's every day for a month and have broken down entirely physically. I have the feeling this may be the exact same kind of thing, far worse. People are going to be eating this stuff, and just like if you eat McDonald's exclusively, they'll begin breaking down mentally and physically, which is certainly fine as far as these people are concerned. But the fact is, the so-called food shortages, when you have, you know, the family farm destroyed, which is the most efficient way to grow food, small farmers, the U.S. was paying farmers not to grow anything because they would drive the price to zero because they're so efficient, they produce so much. Well, that infrastructure is disappearing. So now all of a sudden, 10 years ago, they make too much food. Now there's food shortages. This whole thing is so laughably artificial and created by this great reset ideology, but it's too complicated even for the talking heads on TV to understand. And this is just the beginning. I said it 100 times. This is just getting started. The American diet is going to become inedible. And the regime is going to force you to do it. It's time to start stocking up on actual food.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder how they'll first market it, whether they will make out that it's something really trendy and fashionable and start introducing it to expensive restaurants and try and get away with charging a high price for it and make it so that people, out of curiosity, want to try it, or whether they will start putting it out very cheaply, or whether, as you say, it will end up being mixed in with the fast food stuff. I mean, it's bad enough as it is with the cattle, where they don't actually feed them grass anymore. They feed them solid foods, and they keep them cooped up in barns all the time, so they don't even get outside and see the grass. I mean, if you try grass-fed or organic beef, it's got a real different taste to it than the beef that you normally get. I mean, even normal beef that you get from the butchers now is fed on grain. And a lot of the time it doesn't actually get out and see the fields. And now you're talking about beef that has never actually seen a cow, that's actually been harvested from the stem cells, which is going to be painful for the creature anyway, to just be harvesting stem cells and then just growing it in a culture. And I guess this is going to go alongside the bugs. You can eat the bugs as well for a bit of variety. I mean, it's good that Russia put a stop to the GMO foods years ago, didn't they? And they said that they were compiling a seed bank of uninterfered with plants. But the West has got this GMO food in the food chain now. It's in the cereals. If you eat breakfast cereal, it's very hard to avoid it. You've got tomatoes in the supermarkets that just don't actually go off anymore because they've been the genetics has been modified with it, and now we've got this gloop that's going to be sold to us as meat. I'm glad that I have a local butcher and I know exactly where my meat comes from, and I would advise our listeners to do the same. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this fake meat that's going to be interfering with the food chain?
Oh, yeah. I guess instead of eating the bug paste, Vin, we're just going to get the paste, the indistinguishable paste. You mentioned avoiding these type of things and how difficult it's going to be. And I think a lot of people don't really understand, you know, really how true that is. High fructose corn syrup is one of the things I really just I hate. And I would tell the listeners, if you question any of this, try to cut high fructose corn syrup out of your diet completely. You know, and you might be thinking, well, all I got to do is not drink sodas and I'll be good to go. You start checking your labels at the grocery store. I mean, ketchup has high fructose corn. It's literally in everything. Now, some of this sounds, you know, sounds like far-fetched, you know, like, oh, my gosh, these guys are being alarmists. This is a conspiracy, you know. Oh, it can't be that bad. There can't be all of these ulterior motives to it. Now, we've heard this story. As Dr. Johnson's laid it out about, you know, they're going to take these stem cells or grow them in these cultures and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. Now ask yourself, does that sound like it's going to be more cost efficient than simply slaughtering cattle? Does that sound realistic to you? I mean, it sounds to me, just from a layman's point of view, it sounds to me like this is going to be a much more complicated, you know, it's going to take much more money and effort to grow this pseudo meat than it is to actually just do it, I don't know, the natural way that God intended. So there has to be something else. We're not going to know, as Dr. Johnson's pointed out, we're not going to know what's in this stuff. They're not going to tell us. Here in the U.S., we were talking about how they're going to roll this out. In the U.S., remember, like, I think it was last summer, Burger King rolled out the quote-unquote impossible Whopper. You see, it's impossible because it doesn't actually have meat in it. It has a whole lot of soy, but it's supposed to taste just as good. I didn't try it. Hopefully none of y'all did. None of y'all did either. I'm not eating anything that they say is impossible. It's impossible. You want to eat it, but it's impossible. It's random. We're not going to know what is in this stuff. What are these things? They're going to grow it in this nutritious fluid. It's very nutritious. It's very good for you. This is the very definition of the term Frankenfood. You know, now, Dr. Johnson's hit on some stuff that really, really kind of, I don't know. It's something I'm very much aware of, and that's the destruction of the family farms, of course, and now the cattle ranchers and how they have gone about this. And this has been something that's been going on for some time. Now, people go to the store and they go to the meat aisle and they see their ground beef has gone up like everything else in this country, but it's gone up through the roof. Now, they're going to tell you, or they're at least going to let you think, oh, these cattlemen are sticking it to people. These cattlemen are getting rich while I'm paying three times as much for some steaks than what I was paying just a year or so ago. But that's not the way it works. You remember with the COVID, they shut down meat processing plants because, you know, there's a deadly virus. Well, now we have meat processing plants shutting down because they're catching on fire. We have all of these different varied reasons of why these meat processing plants are shutting down. Now, before it was COVID, now there's mysterious fires and all these different things are happening just by pure coincidence that are shutting down these meat processing plants. Now, what people don't grasp is this is where the corporate end of it. The big meat processing, I think there's something like four, major meat processing outfits. If I remember off, I'm just doing that off the top of my head here in the U.S. That's it. Now, when they shut down a meat processing plant, they make it off of both ends. They go to the consumer. This is where your price goes up at the grocery store. They go to the consumer and they say, well, it's getting scarce because the processing plants are down and we just can't ship as much. That's why your price is good. They justify raising the price multiple times over what you were paying a year or so ago. But what most people can get that. But what you don't get is they flip it on the other side. And when the cattleman goes to sell his cattle, they say, oh, well, we can't pay you as much because we don't have the processing capability. We can't pay you for all these cattle. We have half as many plants running right now as we did before. So we're going to pay you half as much as what we were paying you a year or so ago. They're making it off both ends. And of course, generating billions and billions of dollars on profit while they squeeze out the cattlemen and while they squeeze you at the grocery store. So when you go to the grocery store and you see this high beef prices, don't be thinking, oh, man, oh, these ranchers are getting rich. Trust me, they're not getting rich. Now, Sven was talking a moment ago about, cattle and most cattle. I mean, I speak from here in Texas. Most cattle are actually out grazing. They are grazing in fields. They're grazing in different. Sometimes you'll plant wheat and oats just so the cattle will graze them. You're not even harvesting them. You're not combining. They're not harvesting them to sell on the world market. You're just planting them so the cattle can graze it. Now, oftentimes before they actually go to the butcher, they will go for a short time to a feedlot where they try to fatten them up. They feed them grain. That's when they're stuck kind of in horrible conditions and disgusting conditions. But that is generally for a short time. Generally, your beef cattle spend most of their lives actually out grazing in fields, then for a short time they go to the feedlot. I'm not saying that's good, but for the most part, they do spend their time. This is squeezing out the cattlemen for any kind of money, putting them out of business, while turning around and making, if they're charging you twice as much for beef at the grocery store and paying the cattlemen half as much for beef at the when it comes to buying the cattle, I mean, they're multiple times increasing their profits. All the while, they're warming up this story. They're warming up this narrative to feed you the beef paste. You're going to eat this nondescript Frankenfood, and you're going to like it. You're not going to have to eat the bugs. You can eat the meat-like soy substance. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It's just the West, and this will be marketed in the West. You know, as you've already pointed out, Russia's not doing this. Other countries aren't doing this in like Eastern Europe and such. This is another example of the West committing collective suicide. It is absolutely amazing. And just a final note before I ramble too dang long, because this story just I'm sitting here just grinding my teeth because they push this garbage on us and tell us it's for our own good. The last thing I just have to just throw a dart at is this nonsensical narrative that cattle are changing the weather. Cattle are now a form of pollution. Now, I was mentioning feedlots. I'm sorry. I was mentioning feedlots, which are the places where cattle, right before slaughter, are pinned up in a close proximity and they're fed in these troughs. Yeah, that is environmentally unfriendly. Yes, that means you go buy a feedlot and it stinks. It's disgusting. But this notion that cattle as a whole, because they exist, are now a form of pollution. You know, they've actually eliminated most of the real pollution, aside from microplastics and things like that. And now they've invented this thing because they say it's changing the weather. Because they have to say that, because if you go out and say, they say, oh, it's this huge pollution. You walk outside, it's like, well, the air seems fine to me. I walk out here through the field and throw some cattle cubes out to the cows, and they all run up here like pets and eat it. You know, they don't look like they're polluting to me. They just look like a part of nature, animals. So they had to create this ridiculous gibberish narrative that could only be sold to an urbanized population that is completely disconnected from nature, that cows are now a source of pollution and cows are changing the weather. I will stop rambling about this, but I will tell you, I'm not eating the mystery soy paste.
I think we can really see what the food standards are like just by looking at the size of people now. I mean, we've got this obesity epidemic over there in America, and it's the same over here in Europe. And, you know, it's got to be the stuff that's in the meat, all the hormones, bovine hormone replacement hormones, stuff to fatten the cattle up. And I think it's fattening the people up as well. And now we're going to have this beef that's grown in a test tube. Matt, have you got any final thoughts on all of that? Do you want to pick up on any of the points that me and Grandpa raised?
You know, I forgot to mention, Grandpa reminded me that last June, now I couldn't read the article, it was in New York Times behind a paywall, a major actual meat processor was hit with ransomware. And this seems to be happening. He mentioned fires, he meant all this stuff. That story hit, it didn't make a big splash, but it was in the New York Times. And this is, you know, very shortly after all this stuff was approved. So if they don't get them through, you know, their monopoly, they'll get them through dirty tricks one way or the other. I know Grandpa has a farm. He knows this stuff very well. I'm kind of a newcomer to this sort of thing, but I certainly know international economics. It isn't going to be cheaper. This is how, you know, technologies get introduced. They promise the world the moon. And pretty soon you have no choice but to buy their nonsense. And then none of that stuff comes true. And what are you going to do about it now? The family farm is gone. They used to overproduce. Now there's food shortages. The truth is that there's so much food and the most food is rotting right now. Farmers make way too much food. So any shortage, any price increase is completely artificial and is based on the fact that capitalism has reached its monopoly stage and has to go.
Support your local farmer. Buy your food at your local farm shop. Grandpa, I believe you've got a prank call that you want to tell us about. Do you want to get into that now?
You know, you just said that and it gave me the idea we should start doing these shows and finish them up by actually prank calling people. That might be a fun aspect. No, we won't actually do that. Yes, we'll finish out our roundtable. Leave it to me to bring something of what I consider a lighter note, but there is, I think there are little nuggets here of information to take away from the story. This story comes from RT. It's titled George W. Bush Outlines Ukraine's Mission to Prankster. This isn't the first time we've had one of these stories where pranksters call up, you know, these supposed, you know, high ranking politicians or political figures, important people, and they just buy into it. It really tells us the bubble that these people live in, to where just random people can call them up and they assume they're real. You know, where the rest of us, like if you're a normal person, you get a call from a number you don't know, you're probably bumping that over to voicemail. But these people not only pick it up, but when the person says, hey, this is President Zelensky of the Ukraine, they're just, oh, okay, couldn't be anybody else. And they'll just sit there and just blabber on. So our story kicks off speaking to a Russian prankster posing as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Former U.S. President George W. Bush advised Kiev. And yes, I will say Kiev. It's not Keith. To focus on eliminating as many Russian troops as possible, Bush suggested that a military victory over Russia would see many of Ukraine's issues go off the table. The undated prank call was staged by the Russian prankster duo known as Volvan and Alexis. They have made a name for themselves calling Western and Ukrainian politicians disguised as other officials to hear what they really think about various issues often related to Russia. Some critics claim that the duo work for the Russian government. And I'll I'll stop there because this is such a fun story. I've kind of broke it down into pieces, but this is true story. Okay. True story. I don't think I've ever told Sven or Dr. Johnson this, but absolutely true story. I'm not making it up. I'm telling y'all truth. I have actually shaken the hand of George W. Bush, believe that or not. I did. I shook George W. Bush's hand. I wish I still had the picture of me shaking George W. Bush's hand. I'd put it at the top of every one of my shows. I could ruin the man politically, but no, I don't have the picture. Please don't send a hit squad after me. I'm just this lowly guy here. But yes, I actually did. Went back in the 90s when he was running for Texas governor. He was going around doing a tour and, you know, lying to people like they all do. And I met the guy and, you know, shook the guy's hand. I'm reminded of that, by the way, every time I wipe my ass, especially if I'm on the road at a convenience store and it's, you know, they got that cheap, thin paper that you got to roll off by hand. Anyway, there I go with the rambling again. I love how they try to dismiss this as, you know, with the usual, anybody that spent 10 minutes back and forthing with people on the internet, social media, you come to realize they use the same tactics, which one of the go-tos is disqualify. In other words, you should just dismiss how stupid George W. Bush and all these people actually are. They're literally empty suits. Because, you know, some critics claim the duo work for the Russian government. That's just classic disqualify. Please don't notice how all of these supposed rulers that we have are nothing more than morons. They're empty suits. They're so stupid that they just answer random calls on their cell phone and assume that whoever's on the other end is who they say they are. You're not supposed to notice that, you see, because disqualify. They probably work for the Russian government. Well, they may or they may not, but that really doesn't change the fact that George W. Bush is a moron. Joe Biden is completely senile. And all of these other people are pretty much just empty suits, just essentially pushing policies they're told to push in exchange for payoffs, bribes, and things such as that. And we'll get into this statement about eliminating as many Russian troops as possible. But now that I've started off with a ramble, I'll pass the ramble baton over to Dr. Johnson. You a big fan of George W.? You big fan of W there, Dr. J?
Boy, I'm really happy I didn't come after you. I'm not so sure how I would follow that. You were very coherent there for a while, and then you kind of just fell off the cliff. But I used to have a picture of me shaking hands with John Sununu. If you remember him in the 1992, he was there the 1992 New Hampshire primary. But I don't know where that is anymore. But yes, I agree. If you ever find that thing, put it at the head of everything you do, like a letterhead. This duo I've heard of many times before. They've done this a lot. They've done it in Europe. They've done it. You know, they have the perfect accent. They know how to talk the talk. I've heard at least one of these recorded calls. It was taken off YouTube a while ago. But they really know how to talk like some, you know, they often don't say that they're a president or something. Sometimes they say that they're a lower level bureaucrat that would be really hard to verify. You know, a commander of the Eastern Military District of Russia or something, you know, and so they get put through. And what it proves is, I guess Grandpa kind of said it all in a way, but it proves that these guys are very ignorant. I think the last president who had any real functional knowledge was probably Richard Nixon. I tell people to go back to the 1960 when he so-called lost to Kennedy, that foreign policy debate with Kennedy, and it's most Americans couldn't comprehend it today. It was actually a very high level discussion. Today would be almost considered academic. So that's gone down very far. I doubt he would be so fooled by this. But once Nixon was, you know, removed from office in what amounted to a coup over a ridiculous accusation, they were all ignorant after that. So it's no surprise that these people not only will believe whatever they're told, but then spout off things in usually in very crude terms. They don't really understand what's happening. But they've done this. They've done this to the European Commission. They've done this all over the place. And of course, they have a standard response, like everyone does. The standard response is, this is Russian government, as if this is what they're going to waste their time on, that this is what they're going to do. Now, it would be funny if it was a government, you know, agency dedicated to pranking people. That would be fun because these people deserve it. It's making a fool of them. That would be funny. It would be comic, but it's not. I think they have better things to do. But that shows you the knee-jerk response of ignorant people who don't understand the world around them, but are are put in these positions because they're loyal, because they look good in a suit, because they're senile and therefore can't be a threat to anybody. They're stupid. Stupid people generally aren't threats to anybody. You know, they're not devious enough to be one. So this just exposes what the ruling class is not stupid, but the political wing of the ruling class is. I mean, politicians are figureheads. The ruling class generally doesn't hold office. They're not stupid. Holding office, you have to be an idiot. You know, give these simple one syllable speeches to you know, any group you come across. Intelligent people couldn't do that. And frankly, Nixon didn't do that. If you followed his campaign, read about his campaign. And Nixon was a threat. And they got rid of him. And after that, every chief executive has been, especially in foreign policy, a fool. And not even people who are educated. You know, I mean, Ronald Reagan was an actor. I mean, it's these people are disastrous intellectually, and they accidentally say the right thing once in a while. But it's an exposure of what these politicians are. It's an exposure that they are this ignorant and this gullible. And what decisions are they making? What are they signing out there if they're this dumb? And so damage control, as if that has anything to do with it, is, oh, they're Russian agents. As if that, you know, that's simply, as you said, it's a rhetorical method. It has nothing to do with what it proves. And what it proves is that these people are embarrassments.
Well, can I just say that I did once shake hands with Kirk Hammett from Metallica, the guitarist. I don't know if that counts. And yeah, just this bit here about the critics claim the duo work for the Russian government. I mean, it's not like British comedians support what the British government say or toe the government line, is it? I mean, they basically say anybody that actually supports Russia must be working for the Russian government now, don't they? It's not like you're actually allowed to support your country if you come from Russia. If you do that, then you must be a terrible person and banned from everything. But yeah, please do continue, Grandpa, with the prank call.
Well, I think shaking hands with a band guitarist is a whole lot less embarrassing than shaking hands with George W. Bush. In their latest call, one of the pranksters reminded the ex-president of how his administration recognized Serbia's Kosovo breakaway region as independent back in 2007. The caller went on to suggest that President Putin essentially took this straight out of Bush's playbook when he recognized the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics as independent in late February. The former U.S. president left the remark pretty much unanswered, merely replying, "Yes, right, right." However, Bush then offered his thoughts on the problem of the two breakaway Donbass republics. "I think if you prevail, when you prevail, a lot of these other issues go off the table." The former U.S. president proceeded to define what, in his view, should be Ukraine's main focus. "Your mission is to destroy as many Russian troops as you can." And we hit that last line and it quits being funny, doesn't it? You've got the U.S., these people, and I harp on this a lot because they're stupid, and this highlights that they're not really highly intelligent. These people that are running things, and yes, George W. Bush is an ex-president, but I mean, have they gotten better since then? I mean, Dr. Johnson was talking about Nixon, then we had Carter. I mean, you see the progression of it getting worse. Then you had Reagan, then you had Bush number one, and then you had Clinton. I mean, you see the quality continually going down. So it is relevant, even though he's technically an ex-president. Now, the people running these things really think they can, they are stupid, but yet they're the most dangerous kind of stupid. They're just simply ignorant. An ignorant person can be capable of understanding, you know, well, I'm ignorant on that fact. So, you know, I really either need to try to figure it out or I need to look to somebody who isn't ignorant. I mean, if you know, there's nothing wrong being an ignorant. A stupid person will just blunder forward. They think they're smart. And this is reflected in the fact that the people running things now think they're so clever, they can keep this situation contained. They can keep this contained to a proxy war, a proxy conflict with Russia. And because they think that, they keep escalating it. They keep escalating it. We had this latest bid, you know, Finland and Sweden now are going to join NATO. Okay, well, you attacked Ukraine because you didn't want NATO on your border. Well, now we'll escalate and we'll say Finland, Sweden can join NATO as well. What are you going to do about it? Because they really think the hubris is so large. They believe that they can contain, that they have the power to keep things from getting out of hand. This is very, very dangerous. You have this guy who's still very much tapped into the ongoing, the political system here in the U.S. And he's saying your mission is to destroy as many, in other words, kill as many Russians as you can. This is what you need to do. Drag this out as long as you can and kill as many Russian soldiers as you can. This is why the U.S. is shipping weapons to the Ukraine. This is why the U.S. is committing all of these literal acts of war against Russia. But you see these people running, these politicians, they think that they can keep this contained. And now we had the empty, the senile Biden come out today and say that we would go to war with China over Taiwan. I mean, the escalation here is real. And when we see a story like this, we have to believe that not the most intelligent people are at least the political forefront of this. Dr. Johnson, I'll kick it off to you. Like I say, I kind of broke this down into sections because it gives me a chance to drink coffee while I listen to y'all. Dr. Johnson, what do you think? George W. Bush got to just kill off as many Russians as we can. And I guess Russia is supposed to be okay with that.
Well, it's important that you made a distinction between stupidity and ignorance. You know, I'm ignorant when it comes to, molecular physics. Being stupid is very different from this. Being stupid is the realization, the belief. Stupid people usually have very high levels of self-confidence because they're not reflective enough to understand how stupid they are. They can simply put blinders on. They could block things out. They simply don't have the capacity to understand what knowledge they don't have and where it could be found. I've seen professors like this. I mean, this is, it's common. But politicians, we need to remember, are window dressing. They get blamed when something goes wrong. Yeah, the highest level of ignorance is when you refer to an economy as a result of a president. The Biden economy or the Reagan economy, as if they're out there making investment decisions. The economy has nothing to do with the presidency. It's only very indirectly connected to things like fiscal policy. But that's extremely indirect. This is purely a private sector matter. But when things go well, they get massive amounts of profits. When things go bad, they have a politician to blame. Oh, it's the president's fault, not mine. I'm going to get bailed out. It's not my fault making these stupid decisions. No, it's the president who doesn't know half what's going on in the economy. And that's the distinction between ignorance and stupidity. These people are stupid. Usually a narcissist has some intelligence. They have this surface charm to them. Even if it's all phony, they know these guys don't even have that. So they're narcissistic without the perks. Yeah, they don't have the good aspects of narcissism. They don't have any leadership abilities. They're not aware. They're certainly not aware of how ignorant they are. They're not aware of how unpopular they are. And they truly believe, they used to say when we march into Iraq, they're going to welcome us with open arms. They say that with every conflict they're involved in. It never happens. They have no memories. They don't realize. They say the same things over and over again. They usually fail and they can't learn. They can't absorb what that means for policy. They don't remember things. They accept whatever the media says without the tiniest criticism because they don't have the capacity to criticize. Being rational is very difficult. Being rational leads you to avenues you don't want to go down. But these people are so driven by emotion and arrogance and feeling that they could just shut down any train of thought that's inconvenient for them and not realize what they're doing to themselves. This just proves, as I said before, this just proves that these people are stupid. They're narcissistic without the intelligence that usually goes along with narcissism.
He's essentially just saying, well, if you kill enough Russian troops, people will forget that I recognized Kosovo as being independent. And I mean, just to say that, you would think that the mission objective for Ukraine is to win the war, isn't it? Not to destroy as many troops as they can. It's to win the war or to come to a diplomatic solution. I mean, that really gives away what the actual goal of this is. It is just to kill as many Russians as possible, and they really don't care how many Ukrainians get killed as well. And each time they send another load of weapons into Ukraine, it just means more Ukrainians are going to die, more Russians are going to die. You got Zelensky, who's now saying, well, we're not going to give up any Ukraine territory. Well, they've already lost the Ukraine territory right the way along that southern flank there. That's now all a part of the Donbass region, the independent republics there, which of course gets reported over here in the West as Russia has taken it. But Russia hasn't taken it. It's just the Donbass republics securing the area so that Ukraine can no more fire missiles at them. That's what's been going on there. Grandpa, please do continue.
Well, you brought that up when he says they're not going to give up any territory. They're actually including Crimea in that, as if Russia is going to surrender that. And you have Bush here talking about, you know, when you prevail, when you win. Well, they're not going to win. Nobody thinks they're going to actually win. The only question that remains, according to Bush, is whether Kiev will continue to receive help it needs. He expressed the hope that Washington would stay in the lead in terms of delivering weapons to Ukraine. Bush also noted that the Ukrainian government appeared to have good communications with the Biden administration at present, with Ukrainian officials continually informing our military of what's needed. Bush concluded that the U.S. military was very supportive of what you're doing right now. He also revealed that during his time in office, he felt that Ukraine needed to be in the EU and NATO while keeping Russia on the fringe of the military alliance. When the prankster referred to the promise that NATO would not expand eastward made by U.S. Secretary of State James Baker to then President of the Soviet Union Mikhail Gorbachev in the early 90s, Bush argued that, quote, times change. And what Baker promised was years ago. According to Bush, the U.S. must be flexible, adjusting to the times. And that's why you are finding such strong support for your country now. Bush agreed when the prankster said that it doesn't really matter what Baker promised Gorbachev in the past. When the caller suggested that it's now not only a war of Ukraine, it's a war of the Western world against Russians, Bush replied in the affirmative. And I would just highlight here, without droning on too long, this, you have to read that with the backdrop of all of this talk about the rules-based order, the rules-based order. We're defending the rules-based order. Exactly what kind of rules-based order can you have when you have an attitude like, meh, times changed. That was years ago. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we agreed to 20 years ago. It doesn't matter what we agreed to 5 years ago. It doesn't matter what we agreed to yesterday. Today, times change. We agree to something else. One of the things I think that was really highlighted was when Trump threw out the Iranian deal that the Obama administration signed. You know, whether you thought that was good or bad is irrelevant. The thing that really highlighted was the fact of what is the point of ever signing a treaty with the U.S. when the next guy in there can just go in there and tear it up and throw it away. And it doesn't mean anything because, you know, that was years ago and times change. You know, this is their rules-based order, which means that for the U.S. in particular, it's the rules are just whatever we say they are today. How can anybody ever realistically enter negotiations in good faith with the U.S.? Because times change. And if that was years ago, then the rules can just change. Nobody is going to want to enter any sort of serious agreement. That's why when Trump went over and was talking with North Korea, and I'm thinking, well, why would they believe anything you say? Because the next guy can just tear that up and throw it out. You've already set that precedent. But this is where we are. The U.S. is just basically going around like a drunk in a bar, picking fights with everybody, kicking over the bar stools, being belligerent, and while at the same time talking about, you know, the rules-based order. But obviously there are no rules. And yeah, we're not exactly being led by the best and brightest. Dr. Johnson, any final thoughts?
Well, I think you pretty much stole my thunder with all that because, you know, Sven and I must have had 20 shows where the conclusion is you can't negotiate with you. No one trusts the United States. Every treaty that matters, the START treaty, nuclear weapons, the open skies, open seas, all these treaties have been torn up arbitrarily. This has been going on for a long time now. No one trusts the United States. And this is one of the reasons that they're losing allies everywhere. The only ally that I think the U.S. could count on is Britain and sort of Japan, even Japan. Is starting to fall away from this over stuff in Asia, dragging them into a war with China, whatever. No one trusts the United States. And this is why the Russo-Chinese alliance is always going to win, because it's not for-profit companies that make policy. It's the state. And the state is fairly consistent and solid and based on some ethnic background, not this ridiculous, cosmopolitan, infantile, puerile, hackneyed group of talking heads.
Well, that's democracy for you, isn't it? The guy that made the promise to you 5 years ago, he's no longer in power. So the promise, it no longer needs to be kept. I mean, that's basically what they're saying, isn't it? I mean, it's good of Ukraine to continually be informing the American military of what's needed, and for America just to sign that $40 billion check whenever Zelensky orders it. I should imagine it's not going to be too long before the American public get a little bit fed up with paying so much money for their gas. And I think similar is going to happen in Britain. I mean, we could see a change to the political system as a result of all of this. And I certainly do hope so, because that's when the unrest really begins, isn't it? When the fuel prices go up, when there isn't enough food, when people are hungry, when they can't afford to go to work, when the jobs are drying up, they can't even afford to get the factories going because they haven't got the fuel for the electricity, as we were talking about last week, Dr. Johnson. You know, there really could be some serious unrest on the way because of all this. They really do seem to have overplayed their hand somewhat in America and in Britain and in the European Union. And it's good of the Russian comedians, of course, to draw attention to this with comedy. Always the best way to show the ridiculousness of the West, basically, the ridiculousness of any regime. Well, thank you both very much for coming on today. And thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will have more Radio Albion Roundtables throughout the year, so watch out for that. And, of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
When that's the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines and corner scenes and footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot.